The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's time for Star Power Hour, brought to you by ForTalent.com. We'll cover what's hot in the arts and entertainment industry. Our guests will talk about projects they're currently working on and what they're about to do next. You don't want to miss today's show. Now, here is your host, James Barber.
Hey, guys, welcome to the Star Power Hour. This is James Barber on VoiceAmerica.com's Empowerment Channel on VoiceAmerica.com. Did I say that? VoiceAmerica.com. What was that commercial? You remember that commercial?
Yeah, I do.
My guest is mute. He can only say, yeah, I do. I have, what was it, Yahoo?
Was it now?
Google?
Yahoo.com.
Hotels. Hotels.
No. Now you're just saying words.
.com.
Expedia.
Expedia.com.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week I am honored to have a buddy of mine who's like a superhero in television and film.
And the arena,
yeah, because you're a UFC fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And you also are a superhero. I mean, underneath, you actually dress like a superhero.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about.
We don't talk about that, though.
No, we can't tell anybody. Chris Masterson is with us. Dude, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, when I asked you, we were at some human rights event. I was like, you want to come on the radio show? You're like, yeah. You know what I was thinking, too? Because you have such a prolific history in television, and you started very young, right?
Yeah.
That's the one question I wanted to ask you. Like, what is it to start like that young? And like, cause some people just drop out, but you're just exploding.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I started when I was 16 months old. I think it was like Pampers commercial or something like that.
I thought you were doing like Shakespeare at 16.
No,
let's do it to a solid flesh would melt.
I was 20 months old.
Oh, 20.
But yeah. I was a little baby, and it was just, you know, at that point I didn't know what I was doing. It was something my mom took me to do for fun. And my older brother Danny was, I think, 3 or 4 at the time. And it just was like an activity.
Right.
And it just sort of rolled out from there. And as far as like the dropping off point, I think that growing up, that just had to do with my parents. Like that was the only difference. All the other kids that I saw at the same auditions when I was like a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, their parents always seemed to me to be sort of off or sort of crazy. I shouldn't say all of them, but the majority of them. And when you have it, the majority of them today are sort of crazy themselves or no longer working or have just like gone bananas from it. And to the extreme, I have friends that I grew up with acting and they've died of drug overdoses or have killed themselves by now. And I think the few that I've seen make it all the way up and they seem very well adjusted and normal, I can tell you one for one, they all have cool families.
Yeah.
And their acting and their careers was never the focus of their life. Right. It was just one of a bunch of things that they did.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you, is what was the difference? Were the other parents pushing, obsessive?
I would just see the parents get neurotic before the kids would go into the auditions. Y'all sit in the same room when you're waiting to go for an audition and everyone's reading the lines that they're about to say. But, you know, you're 5 or 6 or 7 years old, and my mom would have me, you know, playing a video game or having a conversation or just hanging out, and 30 seconds before it was time to go in, we'd look at the line or 2 or 3 I was going to say and go in the room and do it.
Right.
And I'd look around and I'd see these other kids, and their parents would be like licking their thumbs and wiping things off their faces and giving them a talking to and pay attention and like get back in it and read this. And it's like so serious.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing to those kids. It meant so much more than it had to.
Right.
It wasn't so fun anymore. And those are the kids that at 15 and 16 and 17, I'd have conversations with them and they'd be talking about how like, oh, I haven't had a job in a month and a half. Like that meant their life was derailed to some extent, you know, because all the focus was there. And a lot of them aren't doing well anymore. But again, on the flip side of that, I do see kids that have come up in the acting industry and they're great.
Yeah.
They have their own families now. They're really cool. And they kind of seem to have that support system of someone who made it okay.
Yeah. You know, it's a fascinating thing because I took my oldest daughter when she was teeny, because she has this face. It's like this little, like, this massive curly hair. I mean, she's just a cool chick. And, excuse me, I took her, they wanted to see her for a commercial audition. Or so, no, it was a series. It was a series of some sort. And what we found is that, you know, a lot of the TV series now, they like twins, right? Because there's that time thing.
Of course.
But I took her in, and she was crawling around. I mean, she's that small. And I was wearing a baseball cap, and the casting director looks at me, she goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Where have you been?" I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Where have you been? I've been calling," because I was gone in New York for like 2 years. She was talking to me. She was like, "Where have you been?" She started, because she knew me from my career.
Right.
And so it all became, it kind of was fun because it got all the pressure off of my daughter.
Yeah.
And we ended up just having fun because I'd never taken my kid to an audition before.
Right.
Right. And I was going, okay, is she going to crawl? Is she going to crawl when they want her to? And then I was like, screw it, who cares? You know, and it became so fun.
Yeah.
And she just started laughing. She didn't even crawl. She just looked, and when I was like, okay, baby, come to me. And she just sat there and started laughing hysterically, right? She didn't get it, but it didn't really even matter. But it was that, I saw that same thing, you know?
And pressure move off.
Yeah, but I even see it with, you know, us. I mean, our, you know, adults, when I'm going to, you know, auditions or something like that, they're people obsess. You can see they're shaking, and they're this, and they're people who have done things. You know, they have careers, and
for sure.
I'm just like, don't.
I mean,
worry
that's
about
a
it.
Whole. The concept of an audition, I think, is if you were an alien looking down on this planet and just sort of watching what people do, like Sims.
Yeah.
I think auditioning is one of the things that you look at and scratch your head, because you're trying to act like a character that hasn't been made yet, so it's only in your head at this point, and the writer, right? And you go in and you're reading lines with another person who often isn't an actor themselves.
Right.
So the reaction aspect, which is what I find fun about acting, that's off the table.
Right.
And you're in the woods, and maybe you're playing like Robin Hood-esque characters, but when you're doing it, you're in someone's office, and there's like a stapler right there.
Right.
And then not only that, there's eight people and they're just staring at you. When you watch a movie, you know, you get to see a set and you see all these characters and you look around to what's interesting.
Yeah.
In an audition, everyone's just staring at one person, and that's you. And then the element that goes on top of that, that I think squishes everything down, is that you have three, sometimes four entire scenes memorized in your head that you need to know perfectly, and you're going to do them all in a row, and you get one shot at it.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that, because it's something that I've talked about with people. You know, when I first started coming up, especially in the Broadway theater stuff, it was like, no, hold your sides and be familiar with them, but don't have them memorized.
Sure.
And that has drastically changed. And I talk to people about it all the time, you know, in the sense that young actors are like, well, should I have it memorized? Yeah, have it absolutely memorized. Because the competition has gotten to a point where it's so high, but also I think, and you remember Molly Finn, the casting director?
Yeah, I do.
All right, so I was going in for the movie The Green Mile, and I went in for the completely wrong character. I went in for the
Michael Duncan.
What's that?
Clark Michael Duncan.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Michael
that's what it is.
Duncan.
Yeah. No, I went in for the guy who had the complex for being small.
Okay.
And I'm 6'4", right? I thought it was going like for David.
You have no complexes.
Yeah, I've got no complexes for being small. And have an Oedipal complex. No, I don't. That'd be horrible. Both my parents are dead. It'd be strange. Mom, can I dig you up?
I don't know where to look.
Is that awkward?
No, not at all.
Awkward? I'm staring right at you. but, you know, when I went in, I was familiar with the sides. And it was just Molly Finn and the camera, right? I was going on camera.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. She goes, you ready? I said, yeah. I said, well, who am I reading with? She goes, me. I was like, okay. She had no sides in her hand. I'm going, and it was like a four scenes, you know, like 4 or 5 pages each. I'm like, okay. She goes, ready? She goes, okay. Slate, state your name. I was like, James Barber. And I started reading off this. She had everything memorized. The casting director had everything memorized.
Wow.
And I'm going, holy crap, am I underprepared?
Yeah.
And it taught me a valuable lesson, because even though I may refer to the sides or hold them in my hand, I wasn't as prepared as the person who was reading me, and probably not as prepared as the guy who's going to come in behind me. And it was a really important lesson for me as an actor, especially coming to Los Angeles. But so do you, when you audition now, you have everything memorized pretty much?
Yeah. I mean, to go back to the beginning, I do remember, you know, auditioning in the 80s and the 90s as well, where the rule of thumb was that you were familiar,
right,
but you held your sides, and it was expected that you would do part of the scene looking and part of the scene glancing down, usually while they were talking kind of back and forth.
Right.
And then it would ramp up when you'd get the call back. It was similar, but you'd be more off book. And
right.
Then when you got to producers, you could still hold the sides, but you shouldn't really be looking down at them. And then when you got to, if it was a show, to network, which is usually
right.
the final step, or for a movie, it could be a screen test. At that point, you wouldn't need your sides. But I agree with you. Today, the pool is so large.
Yeah.
And the work is, to an extent, less, so the competition is stiffer. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, who's willing to work harder. If you have a whole pool of people who've proven that they can play roles and they can do different characters and people believe them and like to watch them, then what's going to separate them?
Right.
So what I do now is, if I have an audition and it's the very first audition, I have all my scenes completely memorized. And I've rehearsed them thoroughly with a friend before I've gone in just to do the audition.
Right.
But I still hold my sides. And I do that for two reasons. One, it takes the pressure off completely.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to do it like a play and you fumble a line, which does happen,
mm-hmm.
you're just stuck and the whole machine stops. So if I sense that happening, I can quickly just glance down and look back up. And no one seems to care at all. The other thing is, I think it kind of sends a signal saying, this isn't as good as it's going to get. Like, look, I'm holding the sides in my hand. And I think that people can watch that if they're casting as a director or producer and say, oh, wow, that guy was really good. And that was just an audition.
Right.
You know?
I totally agree with you. I have the same outlook, because it basically, like, when when we're doing, if you do a staged reading of something for Broadway or something like that, and you're presenting a show, the minute you start doing choreography or anything like that, they're going to think, oh, that's a finished product.
Yeah.
And it's a mistake, because it's not a finished product. You want to give them enough to know that you know what you're doing and this is a really good piece. But at the same time, you don't want them to think that that's all there is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that's how I go into it now. And then I'll go all the way up to the last point, holding my sides. If I have a producer session, which is usually the second to last thing you do, I'll still have my sides, and I just make sure to not hold them up in front of my face. They're just kind of down to the side, and if I
right.
need them. And sometimes I'll tuck them under my arm for a moment if I'm doing something physical.
Right.
But they're still there. When I go to network or if I'm screen testing for something, then there just are no sides. And hopefully by that point, you know, it's been rehearsed enough and done enough that there's no question I just wouldn't drop a line.
Yeah, and obviously you've gotten to that point based on what you've done in the audition, so you're pretty secure with the choices that you've made.
Generally.
Yeah, generally.
Yeah.
For those, I mean, we didn't even mention it, but I mean, you know, one of the biggest things that I think people know you for is Malcolm in the Middle, wouldn't you say?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah, which is a pretty cool show.
Yeah,
I love
that show.
Yeah. Your whole family is like, you know, the Masterson clan.
Yeah.
Hang on, I want to take my first break here. We ran a couple minutes over, but I don't care. Why? Because it's my show. I just have to say this every time now. It was a routine prison transfer. Because my voice is down in that Don LaFontaine thing. It's on my little teaser. These guys made a great teaser for me. All right, we'll be right back with more Chris Masterson. Stay tuned to the Star Power Hour with moi. C'est moi. Don't eat a donut, because I'm on the paleo. All right, we'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
Drowning in credit card debt can be stressful. No solutions in sight? Can't find anyone to give you any real advice? Thank goodness there's a website designed for any consumer to get out of debt. Visit thedebtlady.com. Thedebtlady.com features books, articles, media, and expert consultants to help you on your way to financial freedom. Thedebtlady.com, your new best friend.
Where can you listen to some of the world's top life coaches, ready to share success tips and entrepreneurial guidance? The Voice America Empowerment Channel will do just that. Hear about personal growth, building a better business, inspirational life stories, and personal branding. You'll find it every day at VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed. Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
You are tuned in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4Talent.com. Your host is James Barber. If you'd like more information about 4Talent.com and what we do, just log on to our website at 4Talent.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the Star Power Hour. This is James Barber with the amazing Chris Masterson on VoiceAmerica.com's Empowerment Channel. We were talking about, over the break, how we love cheesecake. No, we weren't. We were talking about sponsorship.
I think we all love cheesecake, but if there's one place we do like, it's the Cheesecake Factory. Located down at the Grove, open 7 days a week till 11 p.m.
And that can be your advertisement. No, they're not sponsoring me. But,
I take that back.
Yeah. No, but I do like cheesecake. I haven't had it in a while. Why? Because I'm on the paleo. I'm on the 3X fat loss program, people. 33.8 pounds. I am svelte. That's all I'm saying. No exercise. I feel great. What I was saying was, you know, I mean, literally, like, your entire family is in the business.
Yeah.
And I had this whole, you know, they're all amazingly successful. And I had this idea that you should do a reality show called The Mastersons, right? But, like, have it set in, like, the 1950s, so you're dressed like the 1950s, but you're talking as if we're in 2014. A reality show. Don't you think it'd be a great idea?
I think you're on to something.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do we do on this?
Nothing. You just talk to each other.
Oh, okay. Just, so it's like, us. So it's like dinner with friends, but we're dressed in 50s garb.
50s garb, and you drive like 50s cars.
But we talk contemporarily, and...
Yeah, but then like all the spouses and boyfriends and girlfriends...
It's an easy pitch.
Totally. But everybody else is dressed as 2014.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But you still think that you're in the 50s.
Oh, okay. So at some point we went 88 to get into this zone where we actually, are we literally from the 50s?
No.
Oh, no, okay.
You just think you are.
We're just crazy. Yeah, I can't see not wanting to watch a show like that. I think it's a great idea.
Well, but then I thought, because Danny was in that 70s show, I was like, all right, well, that we can't call it that 50s show.
Uh-uh.
You have to call it
You can kind of do whatever you want at this point.
I can. Yeah. I can talk about whatever I want. The Mastersons. Yeah, we are masters of the universe.
I think I would tune in for that show.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone's has careers and it's gone well. And I think, you know, to go back to what I was saying way earlier, you have a bunch of people from the same family who were raised with the same values and the same concepts, and all of them are doing well and are successful and they're not crazy. And so, like, from the bottom, you know, my youngest sibling is my sister Alana. Mm-hmm. And she's such a terrific actress, and she had an interesting career because she grew up doing commercials and theater, and you know, we started in New York, we did a lot of soap operas and stuff like that, and she then started getting into movies, and she never really did that random thing that propelled her to a spot where she would just get offers for a lot of work,
right.
But she's always working a lot. And all of her work came from just beating out everyone else who was there.
Because she was good.
Hadn't hit that other plateau. Yeah, because she's really, really good. And then in the last few years, she's gotten to do really cool projects. And now she's on the show The Walking Dead, which is such a big show. She's had a lot of opportunity lately, but it's cool. It almost seems like it sort of should be that way. Someone pounds the pavement long enough, puts in the work for long enough, and does good work, and then they get rewarded. And so... It's similar with my younger brother, Jordan. He's doing the show Last Man Standing now, which is Tim Allen's show, which is really funny.
And it's funny because he's playing a dad.
Yeah, he's
and
playing
I'm
a
going,
dad.
Dude, I remember you were a teenager. Now you're a dad.
And within the within the show, that is the concept. Yeah. They're like super young, you know, they're teenage parents. So he's, you know, he's not like 40.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with being 40. I think 40 is a very cool age.
Excuse me,
to be.
I'm 48 at the end of this month.
For sure. I'm saying 40, the 40s.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe we should
today's
in the
40s are yesterday's mid 20s.
Yeah, I say
especially with this whole paleo fad.
Totally. I look like I'm at least, you know, 22. I think.
I'd say you look at least 22. Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks. At least 22. Yeah.
No, I look over at you. You look like you're in your early 30s.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. And when you smile like that, you look like you're in your mid 20s.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm getting jealous.
All right, enough about you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And then, of course, Danny, you know.
Yeah, and Danny, Danny and I, we started at the same time.
Right.
Which is a long time ago.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we kind of had a similar trajectory. We got to do like the times that he would start getting into pilots was sort of the time that I started getting into doing pilots, and we both moved. We all moved to LA at the same time, but we're in, we're different ages, but we were sort of, you know, we could do teenage stuff at the same time.
Right.
And then 20 stuff. And yeah, he, you know, he's another example. He hit a few of those plateaus way early on and got really cool breaks, but was putting in the work at the same time. And he's someone who's now in his 30s and is doing cool stuff, but his career is as long as these really, really old people that we'll work with. We're like, oh, wow, that's the guy from such and such. And that guy will be like, yeah, I started back in this year. And you're like, oh, wow, so did I. But you're 90, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, growing up in the industry, another thing about it is that there's that concept of perspective.
Yeah.
And so we never really got to see it from the outside and want to get in it and then get in it and know the difference.
Right.
We just like grew up doing this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that happens to just sort of take a lot of pressure off it. It doesn't seem something like you can like gain or lose. You just, it's just what you do.
Right. And it's interesting. And what I like now is that you guys are transitioning. You specifically, I mean, you're doing films. You're, can you talk about some of the films that you're doing, you have done? Because it is a difference between, obviously, I mean, coming from New York, you knew the theater world, you know, at least from seeing it or, you know, being around it. And then getting to television, a little different. And then getting the films, certainly different. So what are you doing film-wise now? Because that's one of the things that I was reading about with you. And then what's the transition? Is it different for the guys out there that we're talking to? And what's your perspective?
To transition from television to film or? To me, it all feels the same, to be honest. Mm-hmm. When I've done theater or a commercial or daytime television, primetime television, a movie, a short, it you're kind of doing the same thing. You just make adjustments. At least I do anyway. If I'm doing theater, I'm acting the same way. I'm just acting a little more amplified so people can see it from further away. And then if you're shooting a movie and you know your face is going to be 70 feet wide, I'm going to scale that way down because they're going to be able to see it in the slightest movement or the, or even, you know, if I just think a thought, it'll get conveyed. And then the processes are slightly different, but you're doing the same thing. When you do theater, as you know, you have, you know, weeks of rehearsal leading up to when the show starts. When you do a film, you have sometimes a few minutes of rehearsal before that scene is shot.
Right.
But again, it's like the core, you know, technique that you're using to me is very similar.
Yeah.
As far as the business end of it, there's different ways to get into film or even to television. But for film, commonly, if you're playing starring roles, you either have to be a big enough name that you're going to draw people at the box office, or you have to be this perfect piece of talent that links up with this perfect role at the perfect time. And again, if you're out there doing it for long enough, that will often happen. Or you have to make your own movie. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do that. And that's something that I find really interesting.
Me too.
It's a lot more work, but I think it's the ultimate reward, seeing something go on the screen that was your idea or that took someone else's idea and you actually got it made, you
know,
from beginning to end. Because that process can take years, but often it takes at least a year.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I talk to people about, I do a lot of student stuff or I have a lot of people and, you know, who come backstage, you know, or meet me at the stage. Well, how do you know, how do you do this? Or we do talkbacks, you know, they'll bring, you know, for me, because I've done television, but certainly not as much as you have. But you don't have that interaction to be able to sit at the edge of the stage and they'll bring student groups in or they'll bring in groups and you sit there and you talk to them. And, you know, the one thing for me that I always looked at was people like Vin Diesel, you know. Now, whether Vin, you think he's an amazing
actor. I've always looked at Vin Diesel as well, by the way.
I've looked at Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
I look at him. But, you know, he did that. He made his own movie.
Yeah.
And then Steven Spielberg picked him up and put in Saving Private Ryan. You know, you look at Ed Burns, you look at Billy Bob Thornton with Sling Blade, you look at these guys that have created Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they create their careers.
Yeah.
And from there, because of the hard work and dedication, they're, you know, they made their breaks basically is what it is.
Absolutely.
And I'm a true believer in that. I'm a true believer in hard work and dedication, you know, and ethical conduct in this business. Cause so often you know, I've been around people like, you know, you're talking about something you're doing and the next thing you know, the next guy's on his phone going, hey, so-and-so, I got this audition for blah, 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 because he's doing it, you know, which it's either here nor there, but I don't like the concept of stepping on someone to get up, you know, to sure. take a leg up. But I totally agree with you. What are you working on now? Like, what's the thing?
Well, recently I've been doing a lot of pilots.
Uh-huh. And pilot season, right?
Yeah, pilots are interesting because you, for anyone who doesn't know, a pilot is essentially the first episode of a series that may or may not ever come to fruition.
Right.
So, you know, when you had a show like Cheers,
mm-hmm.
at one point, I assume, they shot the first episode of Cheers, and then the network looked at that and said, oh, okay, yeah, I could see that being a show. I think people will watch that. I think we can get ad sales by having this show on and all the other things that they think about. And they compared it to the 8 or 10 other pilots that they made for other series, and they chose Cheers to be picked up probably for a season. So they said, we're going to buy 22 episodes of the show total, including the pilot that we already made, and let's do it. But for every show that comes on the air, there's 8 or 10 other ones that didn't make it. And as an actor, you know, we have this thing that's going on right now. It's called pilot season. It's this time every year. And you get to audition to and then hopefully book and act in these pilots. And you have no idea if they're ever going to be shows.
Right.
I don't remember what his numbers were, but I remember hearing an interview with George Clooney where he talked about the amount of pilots that he had done. And it was some obscene amount before he hit on ER and then became the George Clooney that we know, because he hit that plateau and he got to like step off of that.
Right.
But yeah, so that's one of those things also that you might spend 2 or 3 weeks shooting a pilot. Sometimes the deal works out so you can do other stuff as well, other television things. You can take other pilots in second position. Actually, when I did Malcolm in the Middle, that was in second position. I did another show called Sugar Daddies for DreamWorks and a while back, I want to say NBC.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about these two, it was, you know, when tech was starting to become a big thing. So right. the idea was sort of novel then, but it was two early 20s screw-ups who came up with this piece of software. And one was this sort of like crazy science nerd tech guy who figured it out, and the other was like the talker who sold it. Anyway, it made them multi-millionaires. And then the show was just what their life is like. You know, take Beavis and Butthead and give them $500 million
right.
and see what happens. Anyway, that didn't get picked up. And I had done Malcolm in second position, meaning that if the other show went, I wouldn't have gotten to be on Malcolm. And,
right.
and that one went. And that was like a really good
that
year.
That was a good thing.
Me.
And what yeah, a cast,
really
too.
Good. Yeah, for sure.
Hey, let's take our second break. I want to come back and talk about that cast and see what you think. Hey, this is James Barber with Chris Masterson on the Star Power Hour. We'll be right back. Don't eat a donut.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
Drowning in credit card debt can be stressful. No solutions in sight. Can't find anyone to give you any real advice. Thank goodness there's a website designed for any consumer to get out of debt. Visit thedebtlady.com. Thedebtlady.com features books, articles, media, and expert consultants to help you on your way to financial freedom. Thedebtlady.com, your new best friend.
You need to live up to your full potential. You've heard that for years, but now there's a channel to help you get there. Introducing the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Our listeners have told us that they want to be motivated, hear about success stories, and positive encouragement around the clock. And we've responded to you. The Voice America Empowerment Channel is the home of the world's top life coaches, entrepreneurs, and success experts. Listen to the Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's here at VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
You are tuned in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4Talent.com. Your host is James Barber. If you'd like more information about 4Talent.com and what we do, just log on to our website at 4Talent.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey guys, welcome back. This is James Barber on the Star Power Hour. It was the Star Power Hour transfer. I'm going to, you know, my voiceover career is really mm-hmm. taking off. That's all I do is just that one thing. It was a Star Power. No, when I do voiceovers, I actually don't really even use my own voice. I do all these strange, you know, I've done one, so I did an entire, voiceover for a medical device. And I auditioned like this. So when I showed up, my agents are like, make sure you speak with a British accent because I think you're British. And so I said, well, listen, you know, how many pages is it? And they said, no, it's only just two or three pages. I showed up, and it was 25 pages of medical lingo.
Wow.
And it was insane. And one time I just went, oh, my God. They're like, what? I'm like, oh, my God. But I do all these, you know, it's like I talk like this all the time. I do. Yeah. So it's never in my voice.
I would think with a voice like, there's a lot of people who don't sound like you who probably do your voice.
Yeah, it's funny.
You know what I mean?
You know what I get? Because now I'm doing the radio show. It's like, you sound like Howard Stern.
Really?
Yeah, I've gotten that. Yeah, Robin. I'm a little gravelly.
Yeah, I actually do hear a little bit of Howard in your voice.
Yeah, so I'm going to take over a spot on Sirius XM Satellite Radio.
Radio personalities with high or shrill voices?
Yeah, my voice is normally up here, but I'm not going to put it down here. No, I have no idea.
Can you think of any offhand? You have to have the boom of God to be on the radio, essentially.
I don't know. I mean, Carrie Kasem doesn't have a... She's got a cool voice, though, but I mean, she's a woman.
Related to Casey Kasem?
Yeah, it's his daughter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she has her own radio show with called Sixth Sense with Nikki Six from The Crew.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's got a cool voice. She's got, you know, and of course, you got Casey Kasem's voice. Well, Jim Meskimen, who we both know, could do Casey Kasem really well.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to you about the cast of Malcolm because it was a pretty amazing cast.
Sure.
Tell me about him and tell me how you liked working with him.
They're all really great. I know everybody says that about every cast that they work with usually, yeah. Unless they're on like E or something. But yeah, they're really cool. So Jane Kaczmarek, who played Lois, the mom, we were at the audition together and we started talking and she's like, did you read the whole script? And I was like, yeah, that's why I'm here. I'm doing this other show, but I really wanted to audition for this just in second position, even though they probably won't book me because the material is, I don't often get to read something like this. And she's like, look at me. And she pulls like her shirt sort of to the side and she was completely pregnant. She's like, I'm pregnant. Like I'm taking a year or 2 years off, but I read this and I had to audition for it. And we were both sitting in the waiting room, sort of nervous to go in. And we both went in and both ended up getting it. And I knew her because we had played mother and son about 3 years earlier, also on Fox, for a pilot called Youth in Revolt, which more recently got made into a movie. And she's, as you know, she's just a huge talent. She's one of those people who's had a really long career in acting and has played so many different characters. And she was on Hill Street Blues back in the day. She's just like, she's done it all. So she's really great. And it was cool to see her work for that long, and just to make a living as an actor is hard enough, but to work that long and to have an amount of success and then to break out on a show and get a lot of accolades and win awards, and it's good. I feel like that's how it's supposed to happen. And another case just like that is Bryan Cranston.
Oh my God.
Who's just...
He's on Broadway right now.
He's killing it on Broadway right now. He just was on arguably one of the better shows of our generation.
Yeah.
And he's doing really cool movies. He's directing a lot, which is one of his favorite things. And, you know, he met his wife, I want to say in the 70s or early 80s, they were both guest starring on an episode of Airwolf with Jan Michael Vincent. Like that.
Incidentally, the guy that wrote the music for Rebecca, the Broadway show that I was supposed to do, he wrote the theme to Airwolf. It's very funny.
Yes. That's the tie-in.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Can you remember the theme song from Airwolf? Because I can't. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
What's up with Jan Michael Vincent now, by the way?
I don't know. I just had a crush on him, man.
He was so cool looking back in the day. Yeah. And he got weird looking.
Something happened.
He got like his wrinkles started folding on themselves from heroin or something like that.
It's one of those things where you worry. Like, I actually, when I see that, I worry about something, you know?
It makes you not want to smoke or eat McDonald's.
Yeah, exactly.
Go in the sun.
Exactly.
Smile too much.
But Cranston, the thing about Cranston is such diverse. I mean, like Malcolm in the Middle, and then what he later did, and now what he's doing, because it's a Schenken, I think it's a Robert Schenken's piece, but it's unbelievable diversity.
Yeah.
You know? So that was pretty awesome to see his growth.
He was known a little bit here and there from being the dentist on Seinfeld.
Right.
That was all, you know, people sometimes say, were you done? What did you. Were you the dentist on Seinfeld? And now he's, you know, Bryan Cranston. So that's, yeah, it's a guy who he worked most of his life being a working actor, doing guest stars and doing theater and doing, you know, he's in, now you see him, now that you know his face, you see him in everything.
Yeah.
He's in Saving Private Ryan. He's in a million different movies and he's one of those unsung heroes.
Yeah.
So he started doing Malcolm in the Middle and, you know, the role in the pilot, he only had a few lines. He was sort of the out to lunch dad who was just kind of there making weird faces and every so often would sort of say something and did the pilot. And he made that so interesting that they gave him more of a part for the second episode. And he crushed that. And then the third and fourth episodes, they gave him a lot to do and he completely crushed those. And then they started writing him things like this roller skating episode and just these certain episodes where he just took an idea and made it so funny and so interesting that it was undeniable. And within the first season, he was just like standing right in front.
Right.
And that was just from being really good at his craft and being willing to put it out there.
Right.
And where he's gone from that, as you know, is unbelievable. Yeah. And to boot, he is literally, I know people use that word loosely nowadays, but he really is literally one of, if not the nicest, most interested people I've ever met. He was the guy who, you know, we'd work 14 hours, 15 hours a day and have a Sunday off. And he would be at, you know, one of our grip's son's piano recital at his school. And he wouldn't tell people about it. He wasn't trying to be like the great guy. He just really is a great guy. He knows everybody's name. He wants everybody to be involved. In the later seasons of Malcolm, I wanted to direct because I had gone to film school and I would always make shorts and I really wanted to do that. But it seemed like too big of an undertaking. He was one of our directors on the show. And a lot of people would try to sort of keep that to themselves and want to be the director.
Yeah.
He would hound me, get in there, pitch them. You know, there's an episode coming up. Get your name on that list. Like, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. You've got to do it. And he had no reason to do that other than he was just awesome.
Yeah.
He wanted me and everyone around him to do well. And I ended up getting to direct an episode in our last season and it went really well. And had we gone forward, I was going to do more. And that for me was so fun and so exciting and sort of the pinnacle of what I had gotten to do creatively at that point.
Yeah.
And I would really attribute it to him like nudging me the whole time.
That's incredible.
That's the kind of guy he is. So seeing someone like that blow up as big as he has now is another example of the way I feel like it's supposed to happen.
Yeah. It's just, it's so wonderful. And I agree with you on that too, because it's like that trajectory of niceness, you know?
Yeah.
And it is, I shouldn't say it's rare because I tend to surround myself with, try to surround myself with people like that anyway. And
people who look like Bryan Cranston.
You know, people look like Bryan Cranston and then would like go off and do some really crazy stuff, like try to kill me for drugs.
Yeah.
And then do a play, you know, because that's my life. No, you know what I mean? But people who are nice, who are supportive, who are, I've tried to do that personally. It's like help people get to where they want to be, you know, because what else are we going to do? Why be selfish?
Agreed.
You know, stop talking because it's my show. Anyway. So how long did Malcolm run? How many seasons?
I think we went 7.
Wow.
It's a little tough to tell because we started, if I remember correctly, as a mid-season replacement.
Uh-huh. And explain that because some people don't know what mid-season replacement is.
Well, basically,
Seinfeld was supposed to be a mid-season replacement.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually heard of a lot of shows that did really well that were mid-season replacements. Yeah. So we were talking earlier about making a pilot. It's the first episode. Mm-hmm. Then they will say, okay, we want to pick up a show. And they'll usually pick it up if they believe in it for 22 episodes. Sometimes they'll pick it up for half of that or half of that-ish, which is around 13 episodes. Yeah. And they'll have the show on. And as it's coming up to the halfway point, they start to say, do we want to pick this up for the rest of the season? Or do we not feel like it's doing strongly enough? If it's not, they get rid of the show and they have to replace it with something. And that show is called a mid-season replacement.
Right.
And so that's what Malcolm was. We started in the middle of the season. I think our first season was 8 or 9 episodes, something like that. So season one was half a season. And then I think we went for 6 or so years after that. So we were on for 7 years and we did 6.5 seasons.
Right.
It was like 150 episodes about.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And so what's the deal? So you're doing film.
Really,
what do you want to do? I mean, you can do anything you want. That's what sounded cool.
Yeah. But I like doing everything.
Yeah.
I've never really had a point in my own career where I've been trying to do just a thing.
Right.
You know, I saw this interview, on, I think it was on ESPN Classics with Mario Andretti recently, mm-hmm. and it reminded me of an outlook that I didn't realize that I had, but I did. People were asking him about the highs and lows of his career.
Right.
And he said, well, I don't know. I've never really been aware of them because I've always done so many different kinds of racing. And so if you don't see me doing A, B, or C, or this thing that you know me for, all my focus has been on, and I don't know what he was talking about, but like maybe oval track or some other thing.
Right.
And he just was always creating on some aspect of the wide industry that you would call racing.
Right.
And I feel the same. I've always, you know, I might be really stoked on doing a play for a little while, and then maybe I'll be like trying to pretend I can sing in a musical, and then I'll do an indie movie, and then I'll do like a part in a studio film, but then I'll be doing like a show, and it just kind of ebbs and flows. And I just know that I like the feeling that I get when I'm acting. I like the feedback, and I like creating something in my head and communicating that, and then getting a reaction from people who watched it, good or bad. And I don't really care how it is that I do that.
Right.
And I've been fortunate enough to be able to work enough that I don't have to always be doing something to not get like kicked out of my apartment.
Right.
So I have a little breathing room to just sort of do stuff that I find fun. So I did not too long ago, I did a part in a movie called Chapman, and I don't know the release details, but it's coming out in New York and LA for mm-hmm. theatrical. And we shot that in Colorado, up outside of Aspen.
Nice.
So as an experience, as we often get as actors, you get to go to a really exotic or interesting locale and get paid cool money to essentially play make-believe. And
right.
I remember being there, standing in front of some waterfall, you know, in a gorgeous valley. And again, this far down the road into how long I've been doing it, thinking, I can't believe, like, this is what we do. This is unbelievable. This is such a cool job. So I did that. And as I said, I've been doing pilots, and pilots I don't really often promote because I might be promoting a ghost.
Right.
Or not. I did do an interesting pilot last season that I should just talk about just because it was funny. It was,
let's talk about, let me take this last break and then we'll come back and talk about it.
That was the name of the pilot. I'm going to take this last break and then we'll come back and talk about it in a minute.
Great
that
point.
Is crazy.
It's crazy. You know, I'm addicted.
Do not eat a donut.
Do not eat a donut. All right. I'm going to leave on that. All right. This is James Barr. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to the Star Power Hour.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
Drowning in credit card debt can be stressful. No solutions in sight. Can't find anyone to give you any real advice. Thank goodness there's a website designed for any consumer to get out of debt. Visit thedebtlady.com. TheDebtLady.com features books, articles, media, and expert consultants to help you on your way to financial freedom. TheDebtLady.com, your new best friend.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
This is the home of the top life coaches, entrepreneurs, and success drivers. The Voice America Empowerment Channel.
You are tuned in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4talent.com. Your host is James Barber. If you'd like more information about 4talent.com and what we do, just log on to our website at 4talent.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, hey guys, we're back. Chris was texting the entire time we were gone. We were talking about Frozen, how my daughter's addicted to Frozen. And tell the story you just told.
I wish I had the details down better, but there's
you don't have to tell it if you don't want to tell it.
Well, there's a hip-hop artist, a rapper, we should say, and I don't remember correctly because I read it in passing, but I think it was YG, and his album was number 2, I think, last month, which is a huge achievement, you know, in that entire, well, in all of music.
Yeah, it's huge.
His album was number 2, but it was second to Frozen, to the Frozen soundtrack. And I thought that would be an interesting point of view where you're probably really excited you've made it that far and gotten to number 2, but you didn't get to number 1 and it's because a cartoon crushed you. And it sold 4, 6, 8 times as many albums as he did. And that's got to be a weird,
you know what I have to say?
It's
got to
be bittersweet.
Let it go. Let it go.
Yeah,
let
it's
it go.
Okay.
I'm inundated with Let It Go, the theme song that Adina sings. I'm inundated constantly, my 5-year-old. Let it go, let it go, can't hold us out anymore. She sings it better than I do.
I don't know that song. What is that?
It's the major tune from Frozen.
Oh, in Frozen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to.
Did you see the movie?
I got to catch up on my Frozen. Yeah. I have not seen Frozen yet.
You should see it. It's kind of fun.
But obvs, it's on my to-do list.
Come on, Kristen Bell. She's hilarious.
Yeah, I love her. Yeah. No, I'm not even making fun of it.
We did theater together in New York. That's how we met.
Oh.
Yeah, she was doing we were doing the reading of Witches of Eastwick, the musical. And I'm just hanging. I'm like, what are you going to do? She goes, I don't know. I got this thing. I'm probably going to go to L.A. I'm like, really?
You're going
to go to
L.A.? Check that scene out.
Oh, check it out. Explosion.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We were talking about the pilot you did last season.
Oh, yeah. I like them all. I usually don't do them unless I could imagine if that show went.
Doing it for
it'd be
a long
fun
time
to be on, possibly for 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, whatever.
Yeah.
Although, when I was a teenager, I used to focus specifically on pilots that were either, in my estimation, really great or really, really, really terrible. And I would do it on purpose because when you do a pilot, you usually get paid double the amount of a regular episode. So you get a good sum of money. And I would think, okay, if I do this show, there's no way it's going. So I'll try to get like a nice chunk of change and not ever worried about it getting picked up. I've since stopped doing that because I've seen a bunch of shows that I have no idea why they got picked up. And then I realized that that could happen to me. But moving back, I did this one, I think it was last season, and it was, you know, the publication, The Onion.
Yeah.
So it was The Onion, like The Onion newspaper and the site, which is all satirical news. It was a television version of The Onion and it was called Onion News Empire. And it was, Jeffrey Tambor was the anchor,
right,
and I was the young and eager new reporter, and Cheyenne Jackson from 30 Rock, and a couple other really great.
Boy.
William Sadler was on it.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was shot like the newsroom, so it looked and felt very serious and very self important, and what we were doing was biggest, most important piece of news that had ever been done, but what we were reporting on was completely ludicrous and ridiculous.
I love that.
It was really fun. And it went, the reason I bring it up is because it was made by the Amazon network.
Yeah.
And that's something that is happening now and has taken off, where you have
massive
these companies that they just started out as sites.
Right.
And, you know, it happened with Netflix and House of Cards, which everybody's loving. And now Amazon's doing it. I believe Hulu has shows coming out, iTunes. Mm-hmm. And when that script came to me, my first question was, I was like, wait, but it's Amazon? Like, where I buy like appliances and stuff? And my agent was like, oh, no, but think about it like this. And they kind of talked about what they saw the industry becoming, which is, it's not necessarily that it's going to get away, I don't think, from standard like network television, but at one point the concept of being on a show that was on cable was uncool. You know, you were on network or what you were doing wasn't as important.
Right.
And then HBO kind of turned that on its head.
Right.
And Showtime and all these other, well, now cable television is oftentimes better than network television.
Sure, you're talking about Game of Thrones.
Now you have it happening again where you have sites, you have Hulu and Netflix and now Amazon, and they're making shows and they have real budgets and real talent, real directors, and there is no difference. And what's interesting is now, you know, I have like an Apple TV at my house. Mm-hmm. When I turn it on, I can watch network television. I have cable television stations letting me look at their whole body of work. Netflix streams on it. Yep. Amazon streams on it. Like, it's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah. And that's how, because we don't have TV. I told you when we went back to do Rebecca, we just sort of turned the TV off and we just have Apple TV and it's amazing.
You don't, it's kind of all you need at this point.
And that's quite frankly, because VoiceAmerica.com, which is the network that this radio show's on, they launched 3 years ago, VoiceAmerica.tv. And that's why I got excited about it, because this is exactly what I'm doing with VoiceAmerica.tv.
Yeah.
We're building to the point where I'm basically going to create content, and people are creating content. We're bringing shows, people that shoot their own web series that have exploded but don't have an outlet because the other bigger companies are not taking them. We're taking them. We're building it, and you get your sponsorship. You get everything, and they're going to. We can do pay-per-view, live stream. You can do anything on VoiceAmerica.tv, and that's why I'm excited about it, because that's where I saw the industry going a couple years ago. And you know, John Goodman's got an Amazon.com series that Bill Murray was on, and a buddy of mine does a lot of work with them in New York. I think it's exciting because it's sort of like the Wild West in many ways.
Very much so.
You know, and it doesn't limit content. If the content is there and it gets viewership and you can actually have people watch it and they start liking it, that to me is the difference. You know, I was just talking to you, like you can make, you know, people pitch all the time, oh, I can make an amazing movie for $150,000. You know, it looks like a $2 million movie. And I'm like, well, great, but how are you going to get people to watch it? And if you don't, then it's $150,000 paperweight. So it's about driving eyes to that. So getting people like yourself and Tambor and, you know, John Goodman on these series, it's going to drive people to watch them, you know? And then if the content is good, then they're going to explode no matter where they are.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Which I find very, very exciting.
And especially now that that precedent has been set, it's easier talking about it in hindsight. But I remember when I started seeing the House of Cards billboards and it said Netflix.
Yeah.
The only thing I thought was, wow, that's interesting that Kevin Spacey is doing TV.
Yep.
I didn't think, oh, that's crazy that it's Netflix.
Yeah, me too.
I'd never seen a Netflix show, but it just seemed totally okay to me.
Yeah.
You know? And I guess it's because it has been trending in that direction. But you're right. You know, you can, you make these things and you want them to get seen. So having extra outlets or 10 times as many outlets for that is a really good thing.
Yeah.
And then you obviously have the internet and there's a lot of people watching things just, you know, on off of YouTube. People have YouTube shows.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that they want to make something, they get a concept in their head, they draw it up, get a group of people together, they essentially produce that thing being made into something,
mm-hmm.
whether they're monetizing it or not, whether there's 100,000 people watching it or 5 million people watching it, those people are stoked to be spending their life creating those things.
Yeah.
And now you don't have to just stand on a street corner performing like way back in the day.
Right.
Anybody can put it out there. And then it all has to do with, you know, if people like it and they think the material is good, they press like, moves higher on that queue and more people get to see it.
Yeah.
It's a cool time.
It's a really cool time. It's really exciting. I had a cool time with you, brother. I mean, you should come back on.
Absolutely.
It flies.
Tomorrow, maybe?
You want to come tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll be here. I'm just going to actually stay here.
All right.
You go to Palm Springs.
Yeah.
Don't eat any donuts. You have a great time.
Yeah.
I'll take over the show.
Will you take over the show?
Absolutely.
You should come and guest host.
Do that for you.
Have your entire family.
I'd
have
like
a show called The
Master Andy Richter?
Andy
Richter.
Yes.
I'd love to be your Andy Richter, my friend.
Just do that every once in a while.
You got it.
I can't do that because you're off doing a movie or like, I'll be sitting here doing my radio
I'll
show.
I'll be back.
Garden Pavilion at the Celebrity Center. And I'm doing, you're going to be doing movies and in Colorado and playing golf and surfing.
You're going to be in Colorado.
You're going to be in Colorado.
I will be back for sure. I had a really good time.
That's cool, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, you want to say anything? Can you say this is Chris Masterson and you're listening to James Barber Star Power Hour?
Yeah, say that again slower though.
This is your name, Chris Masterson.
Chris Matt, my name here.
Yeah.
This and you're is listening Chris Masterson, to and you're listening to
James Barber's Star Power Hour.
Star Power Hour. This is Chris Masterson. You're listening to James Barber's Star Power Hour.
That was really good.
That sounded voiceover-esque.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
Don't bother me. I'm eating.
Don't bother me. I'm drinking. And you like the mugs?
These are incredible. This is like when you know that you're on a legit show. You get mugs. They say the guy's name on them.
Yeah. Although my mugs have
Your name's misspelled, actually.
Damn it. And who did that logo? Mike Falco did that logo for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, our buddy Mike Falco.
Mike Falco's a good guy.
Yeah, good guy. Amazing web designer.
Logo artiste.
Yeah.
Yeah. This alone is going to get me back on the show anytime you want.
Good. I'll get you one. All right? You can carry it with you. Take it on set with you. Maybe I'll get you a glass water bottle so you can take
like
it with
that.
You. And you can have non-GMO.
I'd like one of those like Pilsner glasses with the rope that goes around,
your neck.
You know?
Yeah.
When you really want a party.
Yeah,
that
like in Vegas.
James Barber's Star Power Hour show.
Yeah, I can get you one. I'll get you one. I know a vendor in China.
Take it.
All right. All right, guys. Hey, thanks for listening. Thank you, Chris Madison, for coming on the show, dude. It's amazing to have you on, and you got to come back.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, tune in next week. I'm going to talk about Il Divo next week, because I went to see them, and my buddy David Miller, who's the amazing tenor in the Il Divo group. I did an opera with his wife, Sarah Joy Miller, who, you know, Anna Nicole, the opera, which was a blast. David blew it off the charts. So I'm going to talk about that next week. We're going to have some special guests. We're going to double up the shows next week. All right, stay tuned, log on, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks again for tuning in this week. James Barber will be back next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4talent.com, the arts and entertainment social network on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Now go check out our site, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.